Greetings, welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. My name is Andy, and this is the last intro I'm going to record from the Virgin Lounge in Perth. I'm sitting here with my mic in the middle of a very big room, and everybody's looking at me wondering what this idiot's doing with a microphone playing radio. So I'm going to try and wrap this up pretty quickly. But this week's episode is really, really interesting, quite an insightful episode with Danny Estrin from Voyager. Danny is a very interesting guy who's been involved with a hell of a lot of stuff over the years. We talk about the new album, which is, I don't know when it's coming out actually, but it's you can pre-order it right now, called Ghost Mile. You can go and check out Voyager via their main website, voyager-australia.com, or you can find Voyager on all the different social media platforms. They've got a current video clip out for Ascension, and by the time this podcast comes out, maybe they will have a second video out as well. I'll let Danny explain that, but we met early this morning, so as I said, recording this in Perth at the airport, and this morning at 7:30 I met with Danny, and the guys were filming their second video clip today down at Hazard Studios in Perth. And so we chat a bit about that, we chat a bit about the band, what's happened in the last 10 years, so a bit of context or a bit of background. I first met Danny when Voyager and Lord played a show together in Sydney in 2006, and Voyager was supporting us, and I think it might have been their first time in Sydney as well. So it was a special show for Lord. It was the first show as Lord, and it was the first Sydney show for Voyager that I recall. So we touch on that very briefly and talk about what's changed in the 10 years that have passed. And we also talk about Danny's other life. Danny's an immigration lawyer. He deals with a lot of interesting stuff when it comes to immigration and helping people get through the convoluted visa process, and also, I guess, from a legal point of view, defending and helping people get through this process when sometimes the process let the process fall by the wayside. And anyway, I'm going to stop trying to explain it. I'll let Danny explain it, but it's extremely interesting, and we talk on some social issues about immigration and some of the attitudes that people have, and Danny's perspective on it all. Danny's an immigrant himself, coming from Germany in the early 90s, so he can see it from both sides. He's got an amazing perspective on this particular topic, and working in this on a day-to-day basis, he sees a hell of a lot. So it's another side of Danny that many people don't know. And I don't know how much he's spoken about it in the past, but I was very happy that he was willing to talk about it, because I know a lot of people tend to keep the world separate. But Danny was really cool just to move the curtain aside and show me a little bit about what his world looks like in that aspect of his life. So really, really cool. Anyway, enough chatting. Please enjoy this episode with Danny Estrin. So you guys are filming today?
We are filming today at this illustrious time in the morning at which no mortal is awake.
Well, it's about 8 o'clock now, and okay, I was trying to get you to get chatting at 7 o'clock, and you basically told me where to go.
I didn't. I told you where to, I told you where not to go, which is not here.
So another song?
Another song, yes, the title track from the new album, Ghost Mile. And hopefully a little photo shoot as well. You know what these things are like. You know,
so is it going to be another iPod commercial? Race.
Sorry?
Is it going to be another iPod commercial?
No, I'm thinking of an iPad commercial this time. Look, I don't mind that comparison. I think it's fine. I think it's something that I personally had, to be honest, I'd never seen. I think the only thing I'd seen was the actual Family Guy ripoff of the iPod commercial.
I think that's all I know as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, in any event.
So the album's almost ready to be released because it's pre-orders at the moment?
Yes. It is. It's almost ready to be released. 12th of May, I think, is our release date, and it's pretty exciting. It feels like this whirlwind that we've just been going through over the last few months, recording it and just even writing it, and then all the promo and then the pledge campaign and all that sort of stuff. So
I'm sure it's been going on for a while, but it seems that everything's just happened very quickly.
Yes. Yeah. No, it has. Well, things have been brooding in the background. Obviously, songs don't get written overnight. Or actually, sometimes they do. it's been a reasonably steady process in terms of songwriting, but in terms of getting the pledge music campaign and getting everything ready to go, it's been full on.
Yeah, and Have you reached your goal on Pledge?
Yeah, we're like at 118%. So sweet. The extra 18% we're just going to boost
up. It's no winter
up,
sun. Yeah. Have you seen?
I have seen that. in fact, I'm actually starting my own GoFundMe campaign for a holiday to the Cocos Islands.
Sweet.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm feeling a little stressed at the moment. So I just really need some R&R.
150,000 euro or something like that? Or?
Oh, look, even if it's 150,000 Australian dollars, it should be fine. It should cover a couple of nights at a nice resort. You know, I just really think that this is the platform for people to reach out and help me as an individual. You know, I've suffered a lot. So,
well, I guess getting to where you are now with rockstardom and there's some benefits that come with that. So you're able to now to reach out to those people and basically ride the wave of support.
Yeah, I'm just going to milk it for everything I've got. You know, if someone decides that they like a particular piece of music or is particularly moved by a song that I've written, I'll just say, just give me money. Because that's how it works, right? You like the song? Cocos Island, baby.
That's it. Oh, yeah. It looks like you got it all worked out.
I've got it totally worked out. Yeah. That's the only reason I do music, in fact. It's really for the money. Yeah.
Well, on a more serious note, slightly, we first met, I think,
in the back of a caravan, 1988.
Oh, geez, that's going back. It's some hazy memories there.
It was the mortification tour of...
Well, after mortification, God rules.
Noah wasn't Noah.
Well, sorry. After that time, I think it was 2006, and was it your first Sydney show, Voyager?
Possibly.
Yeah, let's play with us.
With us?
Oh, sorry. Everyone knows who I am. Us.
I thought you meant A-R-S-E.
Oh, with us.
wasn't aware of that band. Yes,
it's going
yes
really
we
well.
Did. Yes, yeah. We did play, yes.
Yeah, and
Lord.
The band's obviously changed quite a bit.
It has.
In 10 years.
It has, and not consciously so, but we started off as, I guess, more of a power metal type outfit. I guess we're kind of a bit like Pantera. No, Pantera right, started off as
I'm liking this comparison, yep.
Except that we never were a glam band and I'm not really a pseudo-white supremacist. apart from that, we are a little bit like Pantera. And then we sort of started with some power metal roots and have kind of gradually, I guess, sort of maintained some of that, but moved away from the neoclassical to a little bit more of the sort of groove-oriented. I guess we sound a little bit more modern.
It wasn't a conscious decision to sort
Not
of go all. In this direction.
Just, Not at all, yeah.
Just natural flow.
It's just, yeah, one minute you're really into Stradivarius and the next minute you're really not that much into it anymore. And, you develop musically as well. But I think what's stayed with us so far over the years has been, you know, catchy choruses, synth sounds, sort of that air of ambience, and I guess my voice, which is pretty much unmistakable.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that to blow my own trumpet, but it is. You know, it's different. Yeah. I don't have the high wail of the power metal. I don't have the...
You stand out.
Yeah, and some people hate it, some people love it, but I think that's one of those constants that's been there sort of through the years. I used to be the youngest member of the band, now I'm the oldest.
Wow.
That's how times change.
Oh, it's incredible, incredible. Even before the band started, were you doing something... I can't remember if somebody told me or maybe you told me. You're doing something that's a bit typo negative sort of influenced.
No, I was in fact doing crushing black metal.
Oh, same thing.
I had a project called Nachthimmel, which means night sky in German. And I started at the tender age of 16 where I released my first record called Black Light Over Gethsemane, which was, it was done with a Tascam 4-track, which I'd stolen, borrowed from the school. It actually made the local charts, believe it or not.
Really?
And it was pretty crushing stuff, but it had melody in it, you know, and it's one of those things that you're really embarrassed to listen to and people are trawling the internet to try to find copies of.
It really is?
Yeah.
So it's sought after?
It is actually sought after. Mm. And someone wanted to sort of do an interview in relation to that particular part of my life and I respectfully declined. those were the beginnings of my musical career. Like I was black metal to the core. Like
yeah,
I was
wow.
just right into all that. It went from Nirvana to just, I remember hearing Emperor.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is where it's at. And my father said, this sounds like a vacuum cleaner. And I was like, yes, but it's a melodic vacuum cleaner. And that's where it began.
When I was in high school, and I was another kid in, I think a lower grade than me. And, we did a black metal band and it was literally using a drum machine and a bass guitar with so much distortion that you couldn't even decipher what was going on.
Amazing.
And we just screeched into a computer microphone.
Awesome. Did you use Cool Edit Pro?
Oh, maybe. Okay, I definitely have used that in the past.
Pretty advanced.
Yeah, yeah. And we made a cassette release and tried to hand that out at the local black and death metal gigs in Brisbane.
Yeah, yeah.
And people, we did a screen press of a T-shirt as well.
Oh, amazing.
And
would you like to reveal the name of this project?
No. Okay. I'll that's about as much as I'll reveal. But like you, and I think you probably have had a bit more success with your black metal past than I have, but people took it seriously.
Yeah.
And people wanted copies of this cassette, and we were going to redub another batch of cassettes.
Amazing.
Going down to Kmart and buying a few new, few more cassettes to start dubbing. And I was quickly told by my, my
your bandmate, at the
time. Yes, he said, absolutely not.
Okay.
We are not printing anymore. They are cult and exclusive.
Is that cult spelled K-V-L-T?
Exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
I can definitely tell that you're well and truly well-versed in the black metal world.
I can't even tell you how versed I was. I used to subscribe to Ablaze magazine, which is a German black metal publication. I used to get it sent over to Australia, or rather I used to get my dad to send it over from Germany. And I used to know every single underground black metal band.
Wow.
And then that sort of progressed to me liking Blind Guardian. I found Blind Guardian and bands like Gamma Ray and stuff. And Sonata Arctica, and got into that. And I think I was one of the only people in Perth that was into it. I remember our first guitarist, Emmanuel, he was right into it. And I think him and I were the only two. I think we met because he was wearing a Blind Guardian shirt. And we're like, hey.
As it happens, yeah.
It's one of those things, you know. And and then I just knew everything about every single obscure power and progressive metal band. And you just, you know, you go through these massive phases of knowing absolutely everything.
You mentioned before that you moved here in 92.
Yes.
So you were born in Germany.
I was.
So obviously can speak it.
Yes.
You're somewhat fluent.
I am somewhat fluent.
What was the reason for moving here initially? Because your father's still in Germany?
No. So I've got a Russian father, German mother, and relocated with my family in 1992. You know, when you're 11, you don't really have much of a choice.
Yeah.
Your parents say, if we are going to Australia, and you go, okay. No, but the main reason I moved to Australia was just for black metal, because it was just so it was so unexplored at the time.
It's an untapped market.
It was an untapped market, like sort of that desert red dirt metal type type situation.
Time to shake up the scene.
Yeah, I was like, screw this, you know, what was that? I mean, it was like, what, Destroy 666, you know, and Sadistic Execution and bands like that. I thought, oh, what's this rubbish? They need a bit of European injection at the tender age of 11.
You had it all worked out.
I had it all worked out. Yeah, no, so we moved and I had to learn English. I spoke no word of English.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
How quickly did that take to pick it up?
It's still going, mate.
Shit. It's it must have been pretty daunting for a kid to come, not just to. I mean, is Perth the most isolated city?
It's one of the most isolated capital city. But geographically, I think in terms of anything close that's kind of big, it's pretty isolated.
Mentally, it'd be a bit of a shock to the system. But I guess culturally as well, not being able to speak native tongue would be.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I remember my parents put me into a language centre, and then instead of learning English, I learned Spanish swear words because it was mainly with refugees from El Salvador at the time. So they quickly took me out of that and put me into a normal primary school. It was tough. Like you don't speak a single word of the language. And I was 11, 12, and, you know, Mr. Martin in year six would go, all right, we're going to do a quiz. And Daniel, would you like to answer that question? I was like, hello. And I had a rat's tail and a mullet at the time.
Oh, so you had everything going for you.
Dude, in Germany it was all the rage. And in parts of Perth at the time also.
I get you. Well, I certainly had a moment in time in the mid-90s where all the rage in a certain part of Queensland where you would shave your head and leave the front part. So you had a frullet.
Sweet.
Not a mullet, a frullet.
Sweet, yep.
And I was adamant that I would have a zero gauge shave all over. Mum said, no.
Yeah,
absolutely not. Yep. You can have a one.
Okay.
And you've got and at the time I wanted my head completely shaved.
Yep.
And she says, no, leave the front bit so it's less dramatic. I've never forgiven that.
Like a curtain? Like a pelmet? Like
yes.
A, oh, that's great. That's
it was
great.
It was not good.
You would have been so cool in Germany.
At the time, I thought I was pretty... that's right. I should have migrated to Germany. At the time, I thought it was pretty cool, but no, it didn't last long. And then the whole phase of growing that hair out was pretty traumatic.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, look, I quickly realised that mullets and rat's tails, especially the combination of both, probably not the best thing to.
Unless,
not the best thing not to be bullied.
No. Did you cop a fair bit?
Oh, so much.
Yeah.
So much. I copped so much crap at school. Primary school wasn't too bad because after about 2 months, a Russian boy called Sergei came to the school, and then Sergei, I mean, with that name, it's all over. Poor fella, you know. I probably joined in. I was like, all right, someone else to pick on. Awesome, it's not me. But yeah, high school was crap. Like people just Nazi this, Nazi that. They just don't get it.
Yeah. Did that sort of influence you? This is me working out awesome segues, by the way. Watch a professional in motion here.
Yeah.
Did that sort of influence your direction to sort of get into immigration and study, immigration law?
Good segue. I thought you were going to segue into, like, were you disillusioned and got into black metal?
We could have done that also, as well.
Yes. of course, I was the only kid who was remotely into anything heavy at the school. Probably. I think the immigration experience is an interesting one. I personally obviously experienced as a child. I admire people who do it as adults because I think of myself moving to a different country now and trying to settle in a country that's completely foreign. Say if I moved to Turkey, for example. It's an extremely daunting experience. And what the hell do you do?
Yeah.
So that definitely shaped my fascination, I guess, with immigration. But what probably shaped it more was the fact that I was always into, like, diplomatic relations and passports, and I was into, like, politics and all that sort of stuff. And so, I had newsletters as a kid about diplomatic. Yeah, I made up fake countries and stuff.
Really?
And I just really into it, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Do you have a bit of autism?
It's possible.
There's something there.
No, I don't think so. I think my frontal lobe is pretty, pretty well developed.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, though. You're either into black metal or politics, I guess, or both.
Yeah, well, I guess they can blend together, sometimes for the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
depending on...
it's definitely something that shaped me getting into what I am now.
Yeah, it's... So there wasn't a particular incident or anything like that sort of influenced you to go down that path and start studying. It was just a fascination with...
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I just, whenever I see, I was into, even in Europe, I was into number plates. I'd always, you know, the first few words were that I actually spoke was just in different number plates. Like, where are these? Because you'd see, obviously, Europe being so small, so many different countries, so many different number plates from different countries, and I'd just be right into it. And then that fascination with countries and different cultures and language just got me into immigration law.
And so for a dummy like me,
I
mean, I've got an idea of potentially what immigration law is, but what's the definition of it?
It's basically assisting a frictionless passage to Australia.
I like that.
So I'm a big people smuggler, basically. No, it's... It's facilitating the vast labyrinth of the legislation, which has been made up to ensure that only those who come to, only those who we want come to Australia.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, we don't know any of those undesirables here. But immigration law is basically where people have visa problems, where people have issues, where they're either being, they want to make sure that their process is as frictionless as possible, or they're having refusals, cancellations, appeals, that sort of stuff. That's the complex side of immigration law.
And because I'm a stalker, I stalk you on LinkedIn. I watch some of the updates that you put up and some of the success stories that you've had.
With my other life. Yep.
Yeah, in your other life. It must be, at least from the outside, it seems to be quite a daunting job.
Yeah.
It seems to be something that's, there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of hoops to jump through, as you just mentioned, with the government and the laws that are in place. And is it a case of, and this is a very unprofessional way of putting it out there, but is it a way of trying to find loopholes in the system to make it work for that person, or is it just a way to make it fair?
It's a way to make it fair, of course. You know, there's some instances where there are loopholes and there are legitimate loopholes. It's kind of like tax avoidance versus tax evasion.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, where you do find a loophole, and that's very beneficial to your client. The great thing about immigration law is there are parts of it which are black and white. There's just no loopholes. And then the parts of it where, you know, there might be some wording like exceptional circumstances. Mm-hmm. So this happens unless exceptional circumstances apply.
Yeah.
And in that case, it gives you that creativity to be able to argue your case.
Yeah, yeah.
So you say you need to have an English test, you need to do this, but then you need to also have this. If you don't have that, let's argue about it. And that's what I find so fascinating. And it's people law as well.
Do people come to you
So, yes. Yep.
Is it a case of, I'm trying to think of like scenarios, is it a case where family that are already here and they're trying to get a family member to come in to the country and they're experiencing issues so they know locally where to go?
It's either people reaching out from overseas, people reaching out from here who've already got issues with their visas, who want to renew their visa or have been refused, cancelled, things like that. People who've arrived here by boat who have struggled with the process of have been refused, go through the appeals process, or people who've got friends or family overseas who want to try to get them over here.
Do you find that there's a particular demographic or people from certain parts of the world that you're mainly focused on, or I guess the volume is coming from a certain part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, just statistically, in terms of our refugee law practice, which is about 30% of what we do, it's Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, they're the sort of the main countries, just simply because of the number of boat arrivals sort of in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
Came from those particular source countries.
Yeah, all right. There's a lot of
English people. There's a lot of Irish, huge Irish contingent. Some Germans, which helps.
I've got a few Pommy friends that are trying to get residency and go through the whole process of becoming a citizen. And even for them, and I guess they're probably more of the desirable people that our government likes to allow into the country.
Yep.
Even for them, the process is just such a daunting thing, and it's a high cost as well. And I guess, I don't know, I'm assuming that all these laws and these fees and these steps and whatnot, they have to be somewhat complicated. It can't be too easy. But do you think it's, what's your view on it?
I think sometimes it is too hard. Yeah. But I think generally, I think the framework itself is quite fair.
Yeah.
I think the way it's administered sometimes is not fair. Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. I used to actually work on the dark side. I used to work for the department. I used to work for the government side, sort of trying to...
Because you worked in an embassy, didn't you?
I did, yes.
In Berlin?
Yes.
Stalking.
Stalking, big stalker. I think sometimes the way it's administered is unfair, and I think certainly the laws in relation to just putting barriers into place for people who are from the less desirable backgrounds makes it really, really difficult and a really frustrating experience. And navigating through that maze is extremely hard. And I always think if I was in Turkey, for example, I try to navigate through, I would have no idea, and I'm an educated person. So a person that comes from a cave in Afghanistan, they've got no idea what's happening.
Yeah,
and the infrastructure surrounding it is just not enough. The government will say, well, off you go.
Yeah.
You know, see how you go.
And like most government agencies, and I'm going to totally throw anybody that's listening that works in a government agency under the bus, but do you find that it's at times with a lot of these applications, you're really at the mercy of that person?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
How they're feeling on the day.
Absolutely.
And as to whether
when there's any sort of discretion involved, absolutely, when there's black and white, you can't argue with you, say, well, the person meets this requirement, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the points on the English test or whatever. But if there's a discretion, it's like, do I think you're a refugee? Do I think there are compelling circumstances?
Mm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you've got some very, very competent people who understand the legal framework at the department. Very, very.
Yeah.
But there's also people who are just treated like, I'm having a bad day. I'm just going to make this difficult for you. And I've seen some appalling decisions. I've also seen some very good decisions.
Yeah.
And it really depends on who you get on the day. And I think that is quite unfair
that's
in
scary.
Itself. You'd think there's a policy framework. And there is. The policy framework's great. But you got to think, who am I going to get on this day? And if you get someone who just hasn't got a warm bone in their body, then you're screwed.
Yeah.
You really are. And there's no matter, you can jump up and down all you like. Does nothing.
Is it a busy job?
It's super busy.
Yeah.
You've got deadlines, real deadlines, visa expiries. You've got court deadlines and things like that. It's extremely busy.
What's the volume of people roughly the people that approach you guys anyway with your firm?
Well, we generally attract people who either want to outsource their worries or we've got problems.
Okay.
So because we're an immigration law firm,
we're
not just migration agents, we deal with sort of the complex stuff.
Yep.
So, on any given day, I'll probably answer, I don't know, there'll be at least 100 emails in my inbox every day that actually require some sort of action. Yeah.
I hope you've got some time tactics and time management skills with your Outlook.
Of course.
Yes, turn those
Outlook.
You're so
far more advanced than that.
Oh, okay. I'm in the cave then. I was in a car yesterday cruising around Perth, as I do, with an Uber driver, and it was quite fitting, especially talking with you now. And this guy had migrated from New Zealand.
Yep.
He'd been in Perth for 20-odd years and came out here for the mines and whatnot.
Yep.
And he was just talking about the industry and money being sucked out and people having to move elsewhere and whatnot. And for whatever reason, he was talking about people coming in and taking jobs.
Awesome. Awesome.
And as soon as you start making statements like that, you know where the conversation's going to go.
So good.
And he said, luckily we don't get too many boat people anymore. And luckily we've sort of closed the doors and the government's doing a great job of kicking people out and just making sure that people don't come in.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, yeah, okay, that's very interesting. And yeah. I thought, I'm not going to really get into a debate because he is driving me somewhere.
Yep.
So I'll let him. He's an older gentleman, I think, some days gone by, previous generation. And
did you also tell him that the highest number of deportations at the moment are New Zealand citizens?
Oh, that's, if only I knew that fact.
Such a good fact.
Bam, take that. I mean, it's been a hot topic for years.
Yeah.
And I guess for you being on the front line with a lot of this sort of stuff, what's your views on, I mean, this could be a rabbit hole. And I'm keeping an eye on the time.
That's
as well.
All right. That's all right.
I guess with the stereotypical boat people, the debates around detention centres, these offshore detention camps. Camps sounds so bad, but they are.
They are, yeah.
What are your views on, I guess, where it is at the moment? And I guess public perception is such an odd thing as well. And I guess with the way globally we're changing now, and certain people seem to have a bit more of an opportunity to...
they have Facebook. They're like, check Twitter. This out. Australia looks amazing.
Oh, it's scary. Yeah. Scary stuff.
What's my view on it? I think that the magnitude of the problem is vastly exaggerated. If you look at Europe at the moment, there is a problem. The sheer numbers, that is a problem. Mm. You know, even in the US, you know, you've had a thousand people jumping over the border every day. That is a problem here. Yeah. The problem is minuscule.
Yeah.
And the amount of money we're pumping into locking people up on offshore detention centres, it's just horrendous. I don't mind having, you know, a short period of detention to, you know, find out who people are or people have done the wrong thing. But we're putting people on offshore places for years and years and mentally destroying them.
Yep.
If the process can be a lot more fair, the process can be a lot cheaper for the Australian taxpayer as well.
Mm.
You know, if a person's not a refugee or a person doesn't meet the criteria, that's it. You go through the process and then at the end you get to a road and you go, well, that's the end of the road for you.
Yeah.
And there is no need, I think, to lock people up in these offshore detention centres.
I guess it's that fair system that you just keep trying to find. Yeah.
Not everyone is a refugee. Of course they're not. But a lot of them are.
Yeah.
And a lot of them meet the criteria. You know, we have a lot of success with our clients, whether we do it on a paid basis or a pro bono basis. And there is just simply no need to destroy people's lives in offshore detention centres. There are much more humane ways to do it.
It's a scary thing because, unfortunately, and it's the location, it's the demographic, it's that that part of the world where your stereotypical boat people are coming from countries that don't have a lot of money, and they're being forced to do these illegal practices to try and get onto these boats, paying people a shitload of money for people smuggling and whatnot. But stereotypically, they fall into that category where they're that undesirable,
of course,
picture of a person, and we've got people in government at the moment that are unfortunately have got way too much time on the soapbox, and it's very scary because I think if there was a boat full of Caucasian people from the Western world,
for sure,
we would be handling them very differently.
For sure, absolutely, we'd be welcoming them with open arms and going, you know, how can we help?
Yeah,
and it's classic. It's the guy from New Zealand who's been there for 20 years, who probably has never taken out permanent residency or Australian citizenship, who's complaining about the other. And you know, you're entrenched, you get here, and unfortunately, people within the sort of the inverted commas ethnic communities do it as well. They get here, and then they become the, oh, we don't want these people here. So, but you arrived here in very similar ways, you know, oh, they get everything, they do this, and like, isn't that good? It's like gay people, and you know, now going, oh, it was so hard for gays in the 70s, it was so much better. And now all gays, they, you know, there's like all these rainbow flags everywhere. It's like, what? This is progress. This is good. Like, this is what we should be striving towards. If you've been shat on, and then the next person in the same situation 10 years down the track doesn't get shat on, you should be like, this is great. That is progress.
There's some really scary parts to human nature where I think there's this underlying feel or want to be able to complain.
Yeah.
And if we've got an opportunity to shit on somebody else or complain about a situation, then I think there must be some endorphins that flick on and some dopamine hit that kicks in, where you suddenly get that adrenaline rush where you just really feed off it.
Yeah.
I know lots of people that migrated, or their parents migrated out in the 50s.
Yeah.
And they're the first ones to shit on the current hot topic of particular parts of the world migrating here now.
Yep.
And same thing, same conversations.
You just
hang on, you guys Had to do the same thing.
It's the train compartment phenomenon. I don't know if you know, you're familiar with European train compartments, but there's usually, you know, there's a sliding door and then there's six seats, right? And let's say you've got two people sitting there and then, you know, they've been there for a while. Next stop, another person gets in. And the two first people view the new person with suspicion, right?
Yeah.
And then the third, you know, there's three people now. And then after a while, they sort of get used to each other. You know, one of them might offer the other, you know, a sandwich or something like that. And then a few stops later, you know, you've got another person come in, and those three people form that bond and go, well, we're here first. Who the hell is this person? They treat that next person with suspicion. And it's just, it's ridiculous. Exactly the same thing happens here. And I just, you know, I just wish we weren't like that. I wish we were just like, well, I'm here, I've made it. Let's see if you deserve to be here, inverted commas, you know, and if you do, then let's welcome you with open arms.
It's really scary, I think, now, because it's such a – well, it's been a hot topic for years.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's –
it's so heavily politicized. That's the only reason it's a hot topic. It shouldn't be a hot topic. It should be like, hey, we've got this small contingent of refugees, of people who arrive on boats, you know. Yeah, is it bad that people die at sea? Yeah, absolutely. But is that the reason that the government's politicizing it, because they want to stop people dying at sea? No, of course it's not.
No, and I think if you can instill a little bit of fear in your everyday Joe Blow
– of course.
– and think and convince that person that there's an influx of – bad people or people that are a little bit shady and very different and potentially could take your jobs, take your wives, take everything.
Yeah. And take your jobs and Centrelink as well. So, you know.
How dare you?
How dare you?
But if you can convince somebody that you'll put a stop to that, then your everyday, unfortunately, a lot of uneducated people will go, oh, absolutely, I'll put my vote behind that person because they're going to protect us.
It's the vote of fear, and it's a real shame, because we can be such more of an inclusive society. You know, let's actually try to look at – I mean, I know it sounds really touchy-feely, but we can be a society with a social conscience.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can still be conservative and have a social conscience.
Yeah.
You know, you can still vote for whatever you want for, but then also think, hey, you know, let's be a little bit more human about this whole situation, because it is the human experience.
It's incredible. This is a question I've asked everyone this weekend.
Sure.
And it's the whole, where do you see yourself in 5 years? But for you, I guess, with working in immigration law, professionally in that sense, no, don't mean just for yourself, but I guess for, do you call it an industry?
It is an industry.
I guess it's an industry, isn't it? Yeah. Where do you see it in five years? Is it going to be the same thing?
I don't know whether it's going to be the same thing or not. As in, you mean the industry itself?
Yeah.
I think it's a growing industry. I think the more – you might have an economic downturn, but if you've got a conservative government and a government that's really hard on certain parts of the community, especially those who don't have Australian citizenship, you're going to have a lot more problems. So I think the industry will expand. And I think what I'd like to see in the industry is a little bit more skill, a little bit more qualification, a little bit more – not people just doing a crash course and going out there and helping people, because it's people's lives are at risk here. You know, it's people's status in Australia, and people can screw things up for other people very, very easily. So if you don't know what you're doing, don't touch it.
So what you mean by that, in that immigration process of going through – the red tape and the policies and procedures around it, having more education around handling
people,
that?
No, I mean people helping. I mean the people migration helping the agents. Yeah. It's like, you know, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not a family lawyer. I wouldn't touch family law because I don't understand it. Why would I dabble in something that I don't really understand, where I think where the consequences can be so dire for someone?
Why do you think people do that at the moment? Is it just a money thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a money thing. It's you can do a course and you can become a migration agent, and you can not be a very good migration agent. You can destroy a person's life for many, many years by doing something wrong. Don't do it. If you don't know what you don't know.
It's like in the industry that I frequent, being motor vehicles, and you see a corner store solicitor attempting to put a letter of demand through to try and get some form of compensation, or try and work the law to get a claim sought from a manufacturer or whatnot.
Yeah.
And to see, it's a similar scenario where somebody is not an expert in that field. And unfortunately for that customer or that client, or that solicitor, it's not going to help them. They pay that person a hell of a lot of money.
Yep.
And I think these solicitors are trying as a bit of a scare tactic with these letter of demands.
Of course.
But they're doing it basically for that cash grab.
Yeah.
They're not really doing it to seek a favourable outcome.
Yeah.
They're doing it to get somebody on their books and get a client and then follow through with the process and get paid for that process.
Yeah.
And I guess for a motor vehicle,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. But when you're talking about someone's life,
yeah,
it's a completely different story.
It's a completely
different
story.
There's a lot more risk and consequence that's involved. So
yeah, it's like me doing a first aid course and going, yeah, I'll operate on your heart, no worries. Should be right. I'll give it a crack. I haven't done it before. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
You'd have to be an idiot.
Yeah.
So that's the hope, I think, for the industry. Where do I see myself in 5 years? That was
yeah,
question.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
I don't know. I see myself doing similar things to what I'm doing now, you know, running the practice and having my two lives, doing the immigration law, doing that sort of stuff, doing something that actually sort of pays the bills.
Yeah.
And then just music on the other side.
Yeah.
That's the other, you know, that's the left side of me with the long hair. just keep writing good music and hopefully doing tours that I enjoy and see more of the world through doing music. That's one of the great advantages, I think, of doing music, and hopefully continue the recognition that we're getting. And hopefully people like this new album. So if they don't, you know, might quit.
just throw in the towel.
I give up. So many years.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So I'm just keeping an eye on the time.
No, you're right.
We'll do a round two sometime because I think there's probably a lot more to probably bitch and moan about.
Sure.
Or at least I get on my soapbox and it's usually somebody else coming me down. But
I like, I mean, it's not that bad. Life's not that bad. Life's all right, man. Life's good.
Yeah. I'll get the Kleenex out. And
we do. We live in a pretty good country.
Yeah.
And we should value that and we should respect that. But we also should remind the people that are in power not to treat it like a bit of a game and treat us like idiots and to treat us fairly.
Yeah.
That goes not only for those people coming here, that goes for everyone, who are here. But at the same time, I think people also need to sort of wind back their sense of entitlement a little bit, you know, and really appreciate what they've got because it's an amazing place. You know, you speak to someone from the Democratic Republic of Congo and go, there's this place, right, where if you don't have a job, the government will give you money. And then if you've got like a tooth missing or you get your tooth knocked out, the government will pay for that, you know.
Yeah.
It's a thing called Medicare, and the person just looks at you and goes, what? What is this magical place?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Why would they pay for that?
Why would they? Yeah.
Why would someone give me free money?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think we should be, you know, there is, absolutely, we're entitled to a lot of things, but we should be grateful that we live in a society where that is available.
How do you practice that? I mean, obviously you do it professionally with the law in mind.
Yeah.
But for the listeners out there.
Oh, yes.
what should people be doing as far as sharing good practice?
I don't know. Just generally in life?
Yeah, just like, I mean, especially with social media and it's so easy to bitch and moan on there and everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah.
Everyone reads a headline of an article. They don't read the article
opinions
themselves.
Opinions are fine, but opinions have got to be informed opinions. You know, you can't just go out and say things that are just complete nonsense and are completely baseless because you've read some sort of, I don't know, Breitbart News headline. You've got to be informed about what you're saying and you've got to think about why you're saying it and if you're entitled to say it and if you legitimately have a point.
Yeah.
How to get people to be less entitled, I don't know. Just look around and go, hey, I've got a toilet. When I flush my toilet, right, water, my poo goes into the system and I never have to deal with it again. Like, that is amazing, right? You go to East Timor, they don't have that. That's not far away from here, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
It's the little things. Just look at life with a sense of curiosity and think about how wonderful things are. Sure, bitch and moan. I do all the time as well, you know. I might go, it's funny on that point. We played a Glasgow show a few years ago and it was one of those sort of last minute poorly organised type shows. Yeah. There wasn't that many people there. It was fun. And then, you know, I was a bit down about it and then went back to the hotel. I was like, oh, this is, you know, it's pretty crap. And I felt really bad and it was miserable. And then Ash goes, oh, the first world problem, you know, my epic progressive power pop metal band only got 12 people at the first Glasgow show ever. And we're like, I just listened to myself and you're right, that's ridiculous. This is what I'm whinging about. Like,
a bit of
come
perspective.
On, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of perspective. You know, go travel. Go see. Go to some shithole and see how awfully people live, and then come back and go, I've got a house.
Yeah,
I've got an apartment. I've got a roof over my head. It's awesome.
I always think that, especially with some of the Scandinavian countries, and they do the standardized military service that when you come of age about 18 or whatnot,
or civil service
for a couple of years. And I think in the Western world, if not so much that, but if it's something where you're on a program that involves traveling and doing some form of service in countries that are obviously are not as well off as your own, imagine what wonders that would do for the mentality of this country or just the Western world in general.
And it would improve those countries as well. Yeah. And you know what will happen is, and obviously if you don't bomb those countries, it also helps as well. Yeah. But it would help with the refugee crisis. Yeah. Why did the refugee crisis happen? Because Western countries traditionally shat on non-Western countries.
Yeah.
So we can't be surprised, you know. But yeah, I think travel is a really good one. And I think Australians don't do it enough. I mean, Americans don't do it.
No.
I mean, half of them don't do it at all. Don't even have a passport, I think. But Australians should definitely do it. Go somewhere and see suffering and then think how amazing your life is.
Yeah, I like it. Well, I think that's a good way to wrap it up.
I think so. Think about how amazing your life is and think about all the wonderful music that you can listen to on your smartphone.
That's right. I'm going to sit on that plane going back to Sydney this morning. I'm going to bitch and moan about 4 hours of flying. Go, this is ridiculous.
My seat doesn't recline. It's just awful.
I'm not happy with the beer selection on this flight. This is ridiculous. I want something of high quality.
There's a great Louis. Do you know Louis C.K.?
Yes. Is this about the Wi-Fi?
This is about the Wi-Fi.
Do you want to explain it?
It's basically, you find out on the flight. It's about the sense of entitlement. How quickly we become entitled to something that we didn't even know existed a couple of minutes ago. Yeah. It's like, we've got Wi-Fi on the plane. Fantastic. He's, on YouTube. He's doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's like, sorry, it's broken for the moment. Yeah. And people, this is bullshit. It's like, you didn't even know this existed 2 minutes ago. And I think in that same segment, he sort of says, the bitching about the plane, we're on the runway for 40 minutes and it was terrible. And he's like, and then what happened? And then you were in a chair in the sky flying magically through the air.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That's it.
And I think it's what it comes down to. See the world with a sense of amazement. Yeah. Don't whinge too much. Have a whinge because it feels good.
Yeah.
But like, we've got it pretty good. Yeah. We really do.
I think especially now with the exponential sort of development of technology and everything at our fingertips, and things have moved so quickly that I think that's part of the reason why people feel so entitled, because 5 minutes ago we didn't have something, now we've suddenly got something.
Oh,
it's sort of like giving somebody an apple, talking about a piece of food, and someone's so grateful. You give them two, and they're amazing. They're so grateful, but you take one apple off them, and they'll bitch about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'll cut your throat for it.
I'm glad you had to explain that when you said apple, that you had to talk about food.
I just meant
you weren't actually talking about the brand.
No. there you go. Yeah,
that's what I thought. It's the age of technology. Yeah, we have to explain that an apple is not a computer.
Oh dear. Well, I'll plug the new album.
Music.
You guys have got a video to do today, so song, and you're doing some press as well.
Some press stuff, yeah. And interestingly, to sum it all up in a kind of segue-ish type way, Ghost Mile is the title of the album, and a lot of that deals with the complete irrelevance and the insignificance of what we do in our daily lives compared to the universe. You know, there's this awesome bit in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where I think the protagonist finds out how big the universe is, and his mind just explodes because he just cannot fathom how ridiculously huge and insignificant he himself is. And it's the same sort of thing, you know. We bitch and moan about all these things, and we're born into these beautiful, gentle lives, half of us, and then really, no one cares, because in the scheme of things, it doesn't matter. What we're doing right now, doesn't matter.
Nothing.
I could spit in your face right now; it just wouldn't matter. Might matter to you. Has some short-term consequences for me.
Well, I was just speaking.
But the universe doesn't care.
No, that's it. Well, speaking to Alex the other night, where we're talking about legacy, and I was running on probably an hour.
Is that a power metal band?
Yeah, from somewhere in Sweden. But what you leave behind, and there's this paranoia, and I probably had a bit of a mental breakdown just trying to explain it, because I think we all at various times in our lives think about what we're going to leave behind, and we get very sort of insular in our thinking, and we get so fixated on, you don't want to be forgotten.
Mm.
What are you going to do today that's of significance? Trying to find fulfillment or making sure that when you eventually do go, that people don't forget.
Yeah.
And so there's people that are just their whole focus in life is to be as visible and vocal for the right and wrong reasons in the hope that they leave something behind, which amazing legacy.
Which is what you're doing with the podcast, obviously.
Yeah,
you just want to leave something behind.
Yeah.
Well, I've got some news for you, Andy. When you're dead, you're dead.
That's it.
So whatever you leave behind, you're going to have no idea.
That's it. And in the grand scheme of things, some people might have a legacy, but after a few generations, that's gone.
That's gone. Yeah.
Those memories and whatnot are taken with those next couple of generations, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
And people that lived a couple hundred years ago, you wouldn't have a clue who they were and what they did.
Yeah.
And history changes very quickly as
well. It does. It does. So the moral of the story is you've got to do something that's so amazing that even in 200, 300, 400 years' time, they will remember you. Look at Beethoven, Mozart, Bach. That was like 500 years ago.
I was just thinking about killing people. Because that's usually...
That Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. Look, that's okay. Well,
you gotta kill
not recommended.
No.
How about just some nice art, some nice music? Okay. Just what I'm trying to, you know, I had two paths. One of them was, do I kill a lot of people?
This is in your black metal days.
This is in black metal days. Or do I just make a really awesome album that will be remembered for the ages? And that's, I'm still working on that one. Yeah. Right. If this doesn't work out, I'm just going to have to start killing people.
Okay. Well, it's good to have something else up your sleeve just in case.
I like to keep my options open.
That's good. You know? All right. Well, we'll wrap it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy your day filming and sitting in front of the camera.
Yes.
Sounds like fun.
And by the way, this is the earliest you'll ever see me positive.
I like it. I'll embrace it. I'm going to live in the moment and enjoy it.
Do it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that awesome conversation with Danny. If you want to reach out to Danny, you can do so via all the social media platforms. You can find more about Voyager at voyager-australia.com. New album, Ghost Mile, is whether it's not out yet, but you can at least pre-order it. You can check out the new video for Ascension as well. Everything else that we spoke about, I'm going to put links and whatnot over in the show notes at andysocial.net. So please go over there and check out all the links that I put up. And please, as per usual, make sure you reach out to Danny and all of my guests that have been on the show and let them know what you thought of the episode. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up. I feel so awkward recording in the middle of the airport lounge here with everybody looking at me. So before I wrap it up, andysocial.net or andydowling.net, you can find all the links and whatnot from all the previous episodes of the Andy Social podcast and links to Lord as well, my band. So you can find everything that you need about me via that website. Alternatively, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. I'm sure there's a million others. I think I'm on that Russian version of Facebook as well. I really should log back into that and see what's going on in there. Anyway, if you want to support the podcast, there are a few ways you can do it. You can go to andysocial.net and click on the Amazon portal link. What that does is that if you do shop on Amazon, that is, you can click on that link, you shop as per normal on Amazon, and the only thing that changes is that I get a small percentage of what you spend, and that helps fund the podcast, the day-to-day expenses that add up, but it's a labor of love, and if I can cover some of those costs, it'll be quite beneficial. Alternatively, if you want, you can rate and review on iTunes. And you can also share via YouTube. So all the episodes are on YouTube. Or just like, share, retweet, all those different social media functions on all the different platforms. All those little clicks go a long way to reaching more people, getting more listeners. And as a result, more podcast episodes in the future with all sorts of interesting and amazing people such as Danny and everybody else that I've had on so far with this podcast journey. So that's it. Enough yapping. I'm going to finish my beer and stop drawing attention to myself. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye. You're a day.